Multiple people in my family, including my father, are veterans.
Troops that have been to war and now they're back. And
think and be grateful for their service.
Sacrifice, love for their country, just unselfishness.
All that they do for us.
There are some people in this country who take extraordinary steps to provide for the freedom and security. We forget that those people exist.
We know them as the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and Coast Guard. They call themselves soldiers, SEALs, Rangers, airmen, sailors, devil dogs, and so much more. We call them fathers, brothers, sons and husbands, mothers, daughters, sisters, and wives. We call them friend and neighbor. These veterans answered the call. Now, we answer theirs. They are the best our country has to offer, and we love them. Today, we honor them, and we serve them. David Maulsby is your host, and he welcomes you to this community of veterans, as together, we are building the Road to Hope.
Welcome in. Glad to have you along on a Sunday afternoon on the KPRC 950 in the Houston area. We have breaking news for the first time in, I don't know, a long time. Samuel Askins.
Oh, my goodness.
Graced our studio today.
I don't know about grace, but I believe in grace.
Big thanks to our sponsors who allow us this opportunity each and every week. Friends at Jimmy Chonga's, who?
Queso.
Yes.
Queso.
Yeah. So, man, they launched their Plato Soldado.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Only had three.
So. You look like you've only had one, though.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. Great friends of Jimmy Chonga's. And if you haven't tried them out, you're in the Houston area, check out Jimmy Chonga's. If there's not a Jimmy Chonga's close by, try out Gringo's. They also have the Plato Soldado. Yes, if you live outside the Houston area, yeah. That would be the choice. Just go ahead and move to Houston. Also, our friends at Corey Diamond and Design, Billy and Connie Stagner. That's A-C-O-R-I, Corey Diamond and Design. All your jewelry needs, they will take great care of you. Do it with business with people you trust, especially in that, because I'm just diamond stupid. Not that I buy diamonds or anything, but if I did,
yeah,
I would go. But
you did
definitely
once.
Talk to them.
You did once.
Yes. And our friends at oopssteam.com for all the messes that you make and the not messes, you know, just the maintenance. And cleaning out the air ducts in your house, all that kind of good stuff that people never think about, but it needs to get done.
Grout. Oops, whoever cleans their grout.
Yeah.
I do.
Well, of course you do.
Yeah, I do. But I have 2 5-year-olds, a 10-year-old, and a 13-year-old.
Mm, God bless you.
They're nasty. Yeah, I love them, but they're nasty.
We have a great guest with us. We're going to share that with that in just a minute. But first, a news story that, you know, there's a, I don't know if y'all have noticed or not this past week, but there's a few things going on. A few things going on that seem to be of some importance. I don't know.
To who?
To everybody, apparently. Yeah. We're all supposed to be scared and mad.
Yeah, yeah. Wear your mask.
Yeah, we're supposed to be scared and mad. Anyway. In the midst of all that, you probably didn't hear this little tidbit. You're going
to
love this, Sam, if you haven't already seen this.
This is from
military.com.
Oh, joy.
The U.S. Army has replaced the chaotic reception recruits entering basic training have long received from shouting drill instructors with a training event that is now designed to create a bond with their teammates
because
leaders.
Because that's exactly what we need.
Day one of Army basic combat training has always been a rite of passage that involved menacing groups. Menacing, I love the use of that
They
word,
were pretty menacing.
Of drill instructors descending on terrified recruits, yelling commands, ordering trainees to perform push-ups and other exercises with packed duffel bags strapped to their backs. Can you imagine?
Oh, it was horrible.
What a terrible thing. Let's see. Command Sergeant Major Robert Fortenberry, CSM of Infantry School at Fort Benning, Georgia, said, commonly referred to as the shark attack, this non-documented period of instruction was developed during our draft Army years. Drill sergeants were charged with the evaluating trainees' ability to handle stress, singling out the perceived undesirables by enveloping them in a manner that emulated a shark attack, he continued. This activity, however, does not instill the spirit of the infantry. It betrays the innate trust between teammates and, worse, betrays the crucial bond of trust with our leaders. How about that, Mr. Askins, Mr. Infantryman?
You don't want to know what I think. I mean, we're trying
to keep this. Remember, we're on the radio. Yes, we have to watch our language.
You know, to speak to that real quick, mm-hmm. I don't understand why we feel the need to pander to these younger generations when life doesn't pander to us, right? Like, and so we have to remember that it doesn't matter how we feel, right? Just like and I encourage everybody to remember this, that when we go to vote, we don't vote our feelings, we vote our morals, right? Well, if we take our morals out of the military and we put our feelings in there, what are we? That's the question that I have to ask.
Other good news. You remember last week we touched on an article. We didn't spend a lot of time, but we touched on an article talking about suicide rates being up in 2020. Surprise, surprise. Everybody's supposed to isolate, be scared. Don't get out of your bunker, your basement, whatever you have. Everybody be scared. So suicide rates are up. Let's see.
Camp Hope attendance through the roof.
This was the still guys and women still wearing the uniform.
Yes.
Suicide rates 20%.
Yes, I read
that. At least 20% in the Army. Yep. So with all that going on,
And the war. Don't forget that we're still at war. Yeah. Even though nobody talks about it, we're still there.
And National Guard, State Guard, guys have been deployed.
Yep.
Their deployments have been extended because they're taking care of COVID stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what we want the Army to do. Anyway, in the middle of all that, what does the House do? The United States House. This story from Stripes.com.
Here we go.
House approves bill ordering VA to change gender-exclusive motto. That's what we're worried about.
Yeah. Yeah, let's
the wording of a model. Speaking of, we have a special guest with us, Rula.
Hi.
Whoop, there we go. Rula's going to be sharing some of her story, and
it's going to be awesome.
I just tell you, buckle up tight.
Oh boy,
buckle up tight. It's a story. But are you bothered by the VA's motto being gender exclusive?
Like, yes.
He who has borne the battle.
Okay. I am.
All right. There we go. We're going to fix it. Oh, we're going to fix the suicide rate. We're going to fix the motto. Anyway, we'll be back with more of Road to Hope in just a minute. He's rubbing it in. He's just rubbing it in.
I just play them as they come on my screen, Mr. Mo. I don't know what you mean.
Yeah, it's my... It reminds me, my brother always says, never bet on 20-year-olds. So I'm not sure our starting quarterback is 20 yet.
We'll see.
I'm not sure. I don't know what sure how old he is. Anyway, yeah, never bet on 20-year-olds. Okay, anyway, back to Road Hope Radio. Glad to have you along with us. That's Samuel Askins.
From Willis, Texas.
United States
Willis.
Army. The big city of Willis, Texas. How many people live in Willis? 36, 37 now?
There's a ton now.
A ton?
Yes.
What's a ton exactly?
2,000? There's a lot.
2,000 people
a
live in Willis.
Space, L-O-T. Mm. Too many. Too many. Yeah. I actually live in Montgomery now, to be technical. But, yeah. It's just right across the water.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll draw a picture.
Yeah. Montgomery County, buddy.
Which is very
there it is.
On the radio.
Montgomery County.
Everybody cares about. Anyway.
You got to be from there to know.
We have been wanting to share this story with you for some time. You know, we talk about Camp Hope a good bit on this show, which in the early days we did bring in some female veterans.
We did.
To live on campus. We tried to do something that didn't make sense on paper, but we wanted to help. And it's just at the end of the day, it wasn't the best way to help.
No, but we did help.
We did
help.
We
still help a lot of females.
Absolutely. And that's what we want to talk, part of what we want to talk about today. I was on a Zoom call. Everything's on Zoom now, which, you know, has, like everything else, it's good points, it's bad points. But I was on a Zoom call with some folks about the upcoming golf tournament fundraiser in San Antonio.
Yep.
And we were talking about this subject. And, you know, what do you all do? Or do you do anything for the female vets? And so, oh, absolutely. And Cody Full, who runs mm-hmm. the San Antonio chapter, talked about a combat vet that's in one of their groups there. And she had gone to a group previously that was just any vet. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to be combat-related PTSD. So it could be vets in there who have childhood trauma.
Right.
Which is trauma. It's trauma. But in those groups, at least the way we run those groups, it's important that it be combat.
It has to be combat.
Yeah.
That's what our literature's for.
So she felt at home in a group where she was the only female, mm-hmm. but they all shared the same trauma. The same trauma. So I told a little bit about you, Rula, in that meeting.
You did?
Yeah, because I wanted to share with them it's not even all quote unquote military veterans, contractors.
Right.
Which is your story.
Coalition forces.
Well, we got to back up a little bit. So we hear a little bit of accent. Ramon asked earlier if you were from West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not even close.
No?
No, sir.
Where are you from, Rula?
My origin is Lebanon.
Okay.
I was close.
Yeah, he was.
Okay, so your origin's from Lebanon.
Not Tennessee.
We...
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't close then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very nicely done. you know, that's perfect. For the person driving around 610 right now,
yeah.
And their mind's on 100 different things, they hear, okay, Lebanon, okay, fine. So they probably have an idea, they're just not thinking about it. Give us a little, what would be the difference in growing up in Lebanon versus Lebanon, Tennessee?
Big difference. Lebanon is a very small country in the Middle East. We have 16 sects of religions, and the government is based on religion. So even though we don't really have freedom of speech, we get killed.
Literally.
Not yelled at on Facebook.
And everybody hide because they're afraid somebody's going to talk about them on Facebook.
Yeah, and, you know, I lived through the Civil War from 75 to 1990, and I was going through a very bad divorce, and then I got threats for my life.
And we don't have all day, unfortunately, but I do want to drill down on that just a little bit. Civil War.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What did that look like?
Rockets, snipers. I remember when I was going through my divorce, we had to go to church court because we don't have civil marriage in Lebanon. Every Wednesday for 6 years, I needed to go through five different checkpoints from one area to another. And then a lot of times the snipers on both sides would start shooting and I would have to go down and take cover. I've seen people get shot in front of me. Sometimes there would be...
It was
be,
a way of life.
Yeah, it was. And you worked around it.
In fear.
All the time.
And you were raising...
My son.
Your son there.
Yes, he was 6 when we came to the States in 1990.
Why did you choose Houston, Texas?
Mainly because I had family here. Mm-hmm. I had cousins. And my dad wanted me to be safe, not to go somewhere where I don't have anybody. I stayed with them for a few months, and then, you know, we were on our own. But they did help me adjust because it's a big culture shock when you first come here. I thought there was going to be cowboys and cows at the airport, but there weren't any.
Cowboys and cows.
There must have been a day off. I thought there were always cows at the airport.
So when you got here, the quality of life, is it better here than it is there?
I mean, absolutely. There's nowhere to compare.
So let me just ask you an unbiased question that, you know, you hear a lot in the streets right now all over the United States about how there may be a civil war. What would you say to that, to these people that live in this safety bubble that have no idea what war really looks like?
I tell them they have no idea because they haven't seen war before. They haven't lived through war. They haven't lost loved ones. They haven't had their father kidnapped and beaten up like I did. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Your father was kidnapped by...
by militia.
So...
because he was Christian.
How old were you at that point? Were you an adult?
I was 26.
Okay.
He was kidnapped January 16, 1917.
It's okay. I understand.
I can't, 1997, I think. I can't remember.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Obviously a traumatic, of a list of traumatic things that you've experienced.
Yes, sir. But he came back alive with the grace of God.
So if we can, let's fast forward to your opportunity to serve. Because we were driving here on the way to the studio, and you told me that you're unapologetically American.
And, absolutely.
And that's how you feel about it. So if you come from a place that is full of war, and now you look and you see, and I'm sorry, I get a little emotional about this, but, you know, this is a contention point for most American military members is, you know, we come from all walks of life, but we don't see any color, and we don't see the race, because we're taught in the military that you're all green. And so we don't think like that. And so you come and we see that America is a land of opportunity, and we fight for everybody's right to say whatever the heck that they want to say, right? Because that's what we believe in. And then we're told that we need to vote a certain way, or we need to speak a certain way, or that we have to diversify a board in a business that we own privately. Does that sound right to you?
No, not at all. This is the country of freedom.
And people just try to get here for that, right?
That's what I was looking for. The day I became a U.S. citizen in 04, January 16, the same date that my dad got kidnapped a few years before. That was kind of strange. Mm. I felt like I was being baptized all over again. And you get this feeling of just pride and safety. I want safety. That's why I came here. I want to be able to call my son Gabriel by his first name and not be afraid to call him by his name.
Well, hang tight while we go through this quick break. We have a lot more to get to, and we're going to buckle up and take a little ride to an excursion you took that led you to some other difficulties. And when we come back with more of Road to Hope Radio. Welcome back to Road to Hope Radio. Got Samuel Askins with us, United States Army.
Yes.
Ramon Robles.
Ramon. Half of Ramon. Anyway.
I know. I feel awful every time I see him. Like, this guy has lost so much weight,
I'm
and
so
I have
hungry.
Not.
Yeah. Well, he lost it. I found it. So
yeah, you and
we're
me
straight.
Both. And we have Rula and from
Lebanon.
Lebanon.
And Houston, Texas.
Beirut, Lebanon.
Yep. A proud American.
There you go.
Came to the U.S. what year again?
I came to the U.S. in 1990 with my six-year-old son.
1990 took then 14 years for you to become official U.S. citizen?
I became a citizen in 2004, even though I had the chance to do it before. I just couldn't afford it.
Gotcha. So you're saying it cost you something to come to the United States from
Lebanon?
Yeah.
It was my dad, mainly. If he hadn't helped me, I wouldn't have made it, because the first couple of years,
it's not easy.
I was not allowed to work. But I'm very proud to say that I was never illegal for 1 minute.
Right.
I filled up all the paperwork, stood in line, did everything I was asked to do, followed the law, and eventually got a green card. And after that, I became a U.S. citizen.
So what did it cost you back home?
Back home, what do you mean?
Did it cost you, you know, your family? Did
you certainly separated from some family by distance,
it was
if nothing
hard.
Else.
It was hard.
Sure. It was one of the hardest decisions I ever had to make, especially that I come from a very close family. My mom and dad were awesome. I had three sisters, four total. I miss them. I mean, I miss the culture and the music and sure. all of that. I just don't miss the war.
And, well, and it still has to affect you, though.
Yes, it does.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago there was another issue going on in Beirut.
Yes, sir.
And I this is nothing compared to you, but my hometown, we had an idiot pull up in front of a federal building with a truck full of diesel fuel and fertilizer and kill 162 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but when I watched that as someone having moved away from my hometown, trying to look at that, it devastated me.
Yeah. I instantly called one of my sisters who lives a mile and a half from where it happened. And it was kind of a little miracle, you could say, because she was laying down. All the glass broke in the house, but it broke to the inside. The window beside her, the glass broke to the outside. So I think it's a little miracle.
Yeah.
Oh, no doubt. So
in the United States?
The trauma of growing up in a place, Civil War, all that was going on, your dad being taken and beaten. By the grace of God, as you mentioned, he did come home, but still, just the trauma of that.
He was never the same.
I'm certain. Come to the United States, 2004, you become an official United States citizen, which is just, that just makes everything about me just feel good for a minute in the midst of this story. something else took place in 2004.
I got a call. I used to work for ExxonMobil at the time, and I got a call with a 202 area code, and somebody said, is this Rula? I said, yes, and I got scared. I thought maybe I did something, or they think I did something. You know, after 9/11, people from the Middle East that live in the U.S., it was not easy for us because of all of that. And he said, I have your file in front of me. I'm with Homeland Security. I'm offering you a job. And I ended up going to Iraq.
So what did you do in Iraq?
I worked as an interpreter with Special Forces Group 5 and Group 10.
Okay.
And, you know, we interviewed people that brought us information.
Mm-hmm.
We went on missions.
So you speak.
I got to ask just real quick.
Yes.
So you've moved to the States, getting away from all that.
Right. Why'd you go back
and
to it?
And you're working for Exxon.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a job with a company that's going to be around.
Mm-hmm.
You get a call from Homeland Security saying, we have a little something we'd like for you to do.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you say yes?
I didn't say yes instantly. It took me 2 months to make that decision because I had a son who was 18 and, you know, he needed to go to college and all of that. And because my origin is Arabic, I had a little bit of a conflict, not politically speaking. You know, it's just kind of hard for me to talk about that part. But then one day I was watching the news and I saw a picture of a very handsome 20-year-old Marine that got killed in Iraq. And I looked at my son. I thought, that could have been him. That's when I called and I said, okay, I'm ready.
So when you were over there, and so you speak how many languages?
Four.
You speak four languages. I mean, that's a feat in itself, right?
I speak one sort of.
Yeah. Two kind of. Over there, what did you deal with day in and day out? Just, you know, just keep it short, but just kind of tell us a little bit about your daily dealings. Was it tough?
At first, it was hard to adjust because I was the only female in the whole compound. But after they got to know me and I got to know them, everything was awesome. Yes, the missions were difficult, especially having to translate videos of beheadings. That was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. It's still ingrained in my head and in my eyes.
But when you were over there, you felt like you became part of the Central Command family?
Absolutely. I still talk to quite a few of them. These are my brothers and my sons.
There you go.
How strong, Sam, how strong of a woman is sitting in this studio right
exactly.
now?
Exactly.
Oh, come on.
No, I mean, the only woman on the compound. When you said that, that just kind of sucked the breath out of my lungs. Like, that by itself had to be, I don't know, man.
Yeah, so over there, while you were doing all those missions and helping interpret, you experienced some trauma. And you were over there from 04 to...
07.
07, just coming back periodically for a couple weeks at a time.
Yeah, well, the only reason why I actually came back, I wanted to stay, is I found a lump in my breast and I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I didn't want to come back, but I had to.
I know.
I warned you, folks. Yep. Buckle up. It's a story.
So when you got home, what happened once you got home?
At first, I was, of course, focused on getting treatment and surgeries and all of that. And it was a tough couple of years. And then when I got better, I found a really good job, and I couldn't focus. I would get upset very quickly, and I started having what I know now is the symptoms of PTSD. They didn't hit me until after I finished cancer for some reason, because I guess I was focused on cancer.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in my life, I got fired because I was not able to do my job. But the manager sat me down and told me that he's a veteran and that he sees I have PTSD and he needs me to go get help.
So how did you find out about, because you've been part of our organization for how long?
Years.
Yeah, and I can't remember
how I found you. Honestly, my memory is pretty bad.
Oh, well, thank God I'm not the only one.
I can tell you.
Okay.
I remember.
Yeah, so we'll get to your story of dealing with the PTSD for a minute.
Yes, sir.
In just a minute. But where did you go here in Houston for your cancer treatment?
St. Luke's.
Okay.
Not MD Anderson, not because they're not good, but St. Luke's.
How long were you dealing with that?
About a year and a half to two.
Okay. And today you're cancer-free?
Yes, sir. With the grace of God.
Yeah, amen. Thank God to that. So we'll come back with...
I hate cancer.
Yeah, some of why we wanted to share your story and how the program at the PTSD Foundation of America has helped you. Just real quickly, we like to give out some lifesaver awards in the course of the show. And I need to take a breath after hearing all this. I just hold my soul. And I knew it was coming. It's still. Anyway, big, big thanks to our friends at VFW Auxiliary Post 9182. It's our friends out in Katy, Texas. It donated $900 worth of groceries, toiletries. It's brand new shirts for the guys.
Hey, nice.
That's just a
group of veterans
getting together and taking care of fellow veterans. Oh, they also brought by a $10,000 check. I almost forgot to throw that in there. Big, big thank you to those folks. Gene Fowler. Gene with a J, J-E-N. Gene Fowler donated 102 antiperspirants for the guys.
Nice.
That's just, I love these stories because it's the little things here and there that all by themselves don't make sense, but you put it all together and it all gets taken care of. People that care about our veterans, big, big thank you to everyone who supports and helps make Camp Hope and PTSD Foundation available for our veterans. When we come back, we're going to talk about your recovery and what the foundation has been a part of that.
Absolutely. I'll be honored.
Be right back. I would normally let this play for a while and just enjoy it. I would, but we've just got a story that has got to get out. The women that are strong enough to do this job, coming from a country torn in civil war in your childhood and growing up, early adult years, come to the United States, diagnosed with cancer.
Single mother.
Yeah. Walked away from some family at home. Your hometown, your home country. I can't imagine leaving my country. Anyway, you come here, diagnosed with cancer.
Yes.
This is after having been deployed to Iraq for 3 years.
Yes, sir.
Come back, and you're dealing with cancer. That's just a lot all by itself.
That is, especially when you're a CENTCOM interpreter. Like, that's...
PTSD issues that took you a little while to figure out that's what was going on.
And they do that. They manifest over time.
Oh, indeed.
Yes.
And while you are being treated, someone mentions the PTSD Foundation to you.
Yes.
Some folks call that coincidence.
Yeah.
I think it's God.
I'm not a believer. I'm not a believer.
No, it's God. It's absolutely God. Because I went for a ultrasound. I even forgot what hospital, whatever. And there was this young lady. Her name is Jennifer. She was doing the ultrasound. And we started talking. And I told her, you know, I don't know how to do this. I was told I have PTSD. And she said, oh, well, my brother, I'll hook you up with my brother. There's the PTSDUSA.org. Look it up. I'll hook you up. And that's how I came to you guys.
And I know for some folks it might be, how does that all work? But, I mean, I think you've already kind of explained to us how that all works. You were the only female on the compound while you were working with our special forces in Iraq.
Sir.
So walking into a room of 10 or 13 guys.
It was 22 that night. That was 22.
Couldn't have been that bad.
I was shaking in my shoes, especially when I started talking to, when Sam started asking me questions. He did his job, I mean, but I was a little intimidated at first.
Intimidated by?
By the whole thing. First of all, I was the only female. Okay. That made it hard.
Sure.
And I'm from the Middle East, so you get scared that people are going to look at you in another way. You know, even though you went to Iraq and you love America and all of that, there's always that fear in there. You know, it's always there. But I was accepted very quickly. And I felt at home after like half an hour. I just felt like I was among people that can relate to me and understand me more than anybody else.
I so wish I had kept a journal of how many times I've heard those exact words. The first time they sat in one of our warrior groups, it took a minute.
Yeah, it took a little while.
But that was the first time they felt at home after leaving their FOB.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was telling Sam on the way here, you know, even though I have some really good friends, and of course my family loves me, my son, hi Gabe, I love you, but they don't understand me, and I don't blame them. They can't relate to what we've been through.
Right, and we don't expect them to.
No, we don't. But when I'm with this group, I feel at home. I really do.
For the... There's female veterans out there listening.
Why are you speechless?
Well,
what do you say to that? I mean,
well, sometimes there's something to be said for just letting something hang for a minute and let people think about what did I just hear?
Well, I loved it.
I loved it.
No, I'm talking about when Rula came into the room. I remember Rula. I remember my friend. He called me. He said, "Hey, we got a terp that needs some help."
Don't say terp.
An interpreter that needs some
help.
Thank you. can we help? Can we help her? Well, that was a first for me, and so I was immediately like, "Yes," because we you know, at the foundation we help coalition forces. We help everybody.
Combat related.
Exactly.
PTSD.
So let's do it, right? Let's do it. And then she walked in, and she's all of 5 foot tall and maybe 115 pounds.
5'2", please.
5'2".
And grab both of those inches.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it was a beautiful thing because I watched her go from very, very fearful to relaxed, and then to, hey, I belong here.
And I thank you for that.
Well, and because time does run away from us here, and we're clicking down the time here, I would like for you to do something that I can't do, something that not even Sam can do as a veteran.
What would that be?
Speak to the female veteran, the family of the female veteran, and they're in the And they're in the exact same space you were in, that they've been to war.
Right.
They're struggling, but they're a parent. They're maybe a single parent like you were. They got all these responsibilities, but also all these anxieties, all these fears, and the thought of reaching out for help, the thought of walking into a room and being the only woman in there. When sometimes, you know, there's MST, there's other things going on as well. All these hindrances to getting help. Speak to that person.
Well, I'd like to talk to female veterans or contractors that were in Iraq or Afghanistan, and to male veterans too, because it's very hard to come forward and say, I have a problem. It's very hard to come forward and say, I need help. We all have what I call pride. No, I don't need help. I can do this on my own. Well, I tried to do it on my own, and I got suicidal. I think my son, this is the first time he's going to hear this. I almost took my own life, and something told me not to do it. And the next day he called me and he said, I'm going to be a grandma. And that was it for me. That's when I went and got help. So I want you to know that there is help out there. There's a lot of hope and a lot of prayer. Just come forward. I will help you. David will help you. Sam, everybody will help you. No matter who you are or what you're going through, all you need to do is make that phone call or send that text, and we'll all be there for you.
If anyone had the reason to not seek help, to feel like they wouldn't fit in,
they can talk to me.
You were certainly the poster lady for that one.
Yeah.
I don't mind you giving them my phone number. They can call me. I really don't mind. If by coming here today, I can help save one veteran to seek help, then I've done my job.
And just real quickly, because we have exactly a minute and a half, Samuel.
Yes, sir.
Our groups, because we referred to it, she was in our warrior group.
She was.
In the Woodlands.
In the Woodlands.
Help that woman understand what she's walking into.
You're just walking into home. That's what you're walking into. Walking into a group of men and women that have been where you are, that are you, that have struggled with the same things that you've struggled with, that have the same questions, and some of us have answers that have taken 10 years to figure out. You know, I'm on the radio right now. It was a really good thing for Rula to come, because she really brought in a different piece that helped us to form who we are today. Who we struggled with, are we going to help the contractors? Where do we draw the line? And Rula, she broke down those lines. And, you know, at the end of this month, I'll have been sober for 10 years. And, you know, just know that even though, you know, and how I met David, you know, I walked into the same room that Rula walked into, the same church, the same time, and I met a man who said, hey, we're gonna be with you. And that's what we do. We just stay with you. Like, you're not out there alone.
877-717-7873. Veteran Crisis, you know Veteran Crisis. 877-717-7873. The website to find out all the information for all of our groups across Houston, Texas, and across the country. PTSDUSA.org. PTSDUSA.org. Rula, I cannot thank you enough. I just can't thank you enough for your life, your life story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm honored to be here.